All right, so let's jump right into it. We're going to be tackling the cyber attack on Rhode Island's RyeBridges system. This story's been making some pretty big headlines, and I think it raises some serious concerns about data security these days. You know, this breach impacted a ton of people, like 650,000 residents.
Wow.
Yeah, it's almost half of the state's population, and it could have exposed some pretty sensitive info, stuff like social security numbers.
Yeah, that's never good.
No, not at all. But you know, even if you're not living in Rhode Island, this is a deep dive that's really for everyone because we're going to give you some actionable steps that you can take right now to protect your data.
Yeah, that's key. Cybersecurity, it's not just a tech issue anymore. You know, we all got to be proactive about it.
Absolutely. So our source today is this blog post that breaks down what happened with RyeBridges, you know, the impact, and most importantly, it gives us those practical steps that we can take to safeguard our credit and personal info. And to help us kind of unpack all of this, I've got our expert here.
Ready to go?
All right. So December 13th, 2023, mark this date. This is when, you know, things went wrong for RyeBridges.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Deloitte, a vendor that was working with the system, they experienced a cyber attack. The issue is that RyeBridges, you know, it's not just any old system. This is the core of Rhode Island's social service programs, including Medicaid and HealthSource RI.
Right, and that's what makes the scale of the attack so alarming. I mean,
Yeah.
650,000 potentially affected
Search number, yeah.
really shows you how interconnected our digital lives are,
Yeah.
you know, and the consequences of these breaches, they go far.
Yeah, for sure. A big wake-up call. Now, Rhode Island, to their credit, they've been pretty quick in their response. They're going to send out notification letters in January with instructions on how to get free credit monitoring, and they're aiming to have the whole RyeBridges system fully restored and, you know, secure by the new year. They've also got HealthSource RI working with insurers to minimize, you know, out-of-pocket costs for residents that were impacted during January and February.
Yeah, and those are good first steps, but
Yeah.
it does make you think about how reactive our cybersecurity approach still is.
Yeah.
You know, like what could have been done to prevent this attack in the first place?
Yeah.
You know, and what can we learn from this to, you know, strengthen our own defenses?
$1 million question, right? So let's get practical. Like, our listeners probably thinking, okay, what can I do right now to protect myself?
Right.
Our source gives us some advice, and I think it's worth you know, going through it step by step. So first up, credit monitoring services. You know, we all know how crucial those are after something like this.
Absolutely. Credit monitoring is like your early warning system. You know, it doesn't actually prevent fraud, but it lets you know if there's anything fishy going on in your credit report. That way you can act fast, you know, before things get out of control.
So it's like a security camera for your credit, catching those shady characters in the act.
Exactly. And speaking of catching things early, you know, something that we often forget about is our children's information. Sorry, their social security numbers are like gold to criminals.
Yeah.
And the damage. You might not even see it for years.
Scary to think about, like someone stealing your kid's identity. So credit monitoring for kids, a must. But our source goes beyond just monitoring. They also talk about fraud alerts and credit freezes. I think people hear these terms, but they don't always, you know, really know the difference or when to use which one.
You're right. You hear those terms a lot. So let's break them down. Okay. A fraud alert, it's like a little yellow flag on your credit report. Basically, it tells creditors, hey, be extra careful before you give out any new credit in this person's name. Okay.
So it's kind of like saying, hey, double check this person's ID just to be safe.
Exactly. It adds, you know, like another layer of verification, but it doesn't completely block access to your credit.
Yeah.
Now, a credit freeze, that's more like slamming the vault door shut. No new accounts can be opened without you know, specifically saying, yes, this is okay.
got it. Fraud alert, speed bump, credit freeze, brick wall. But how do you choose which one you need?
Well, it depends on your situation, you know,
Yeah.
your comfort level. If you're just generally worried about fraud, maybe a fraud alert's enough. But if you've already dealt with identity theft, or, you know, if you're in a risky situation, then that credit freeze, that's going to offer a lot more protection.
Makes sense. Now, I know you're really big on good, strong password hygiene.
Oh, yeah.
And our source also talks about updating those passwords, you know, for your sensitive accounts, especially after a breach like this. I think we all struggle with making those really strong passwords that we can actually remember. What do you think about that old advice of using a random string of letters and numbers and symbols?
See, that's where things get interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. While it's still important for your password to be complex,
Yeah.
that old advice, it can actually backfire.
Really?
Yeah, people end up writing down their passwords or they use the same one for everything, which is really risky, you know.
Ouch. So what's the better way?
Passphrases. Think of a phrase that's easy for you to remember, but someone else wouldn't easily guess it. And then you can add some numbers or special characters, you know, to make it even tougher.
So instead of P at $123, it's more like, I love deep dives in cybersecurity.
There you go. Longer, more memorable, but still super secure. You can also use a password manager if you want. There are some really good ones out there. They keep all your passwords in, like a digital vault that's encrypted. So you just need to remember one master password to unlock it all.
I've heard about those, but I always thought, what if you forget that master password? Then you're locked out of everything.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's why it's super important to choose a password manager that you trust. You know, one that has those strong security features. Look for things like two-factor authentication, you know, that we just talked about. Multi-device synchronization, and make sure it has emergency access options, just in case.
Okay, good to know. So we've covered credit monitoring, protecting our kids' info, those fraud alerts and freezes, and those strong passwords. Woo! That's a lot. But before we move on, let's take a look at the FAQ section of our source. I think it answers some questions that our listeners might have right now.
Good idea. You, in part one, we were talking about like what you can do right now to protect yourself, right?
Yeah.
After something like the Reed Bridges attack.
Yeah.
But let's step back for a second and think bigger. This was a state-level attack, right? What if it was national? Something like Medicare or Social Security?
Yeah, that's what I kept thinking about after reading this. What could happen if something like that was it's almost like too big to think about.
And it's not really a question of if it'll happen. It's more like when. Mm. These systems are huge and complicated and constantly changing, you know? And that makes them a big target for anyone looking to cause trouble.
So you're saying a big attack on a system like that is bound to happen eventually. That's pretty unsettling.
Yeah. It is. But instead of freaking out, let's think about what we can do to, you know, make it less likely to happen. Like better security and better training for employees would be a good start. But that's not really enough, you know? We need to think bigger and be smarter about it.
Okay, so what would that look like? Where do we even start with a problem that big?
It's going to take a lot of different things working together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, government, private companies, even working with other countries. We need laws about cybersecurity, like real laws that have some teeth, you know? So everyone knows what the rules are and their consequences for breaking them.
So you're saying we need laws with, like, real punishments for people who don't follow the rules?
Yeah, exactly. And we got to invest in the latest technology, too, you know?
Yeah.
Stuff like artificial intelligence and machine learning. That's how we can, like, detect these attacks before they even happen and respond faster and better, you know?
Using AI for cybersecurity. That sounds kind of sci-fi.
I know, right? But it's real. See, the problem with the old security systems is that they need to be told what to look for, you know? Like specific rules or patterns. But these hackers, they're always coming up with new tricks.
So it's like they're always changing, right? You can't keep up.
Exactly. But AI and machine learning, they can look at a ton of data in real time and find patterns that people might miss. And the more they learn, the better they get at it, you know?
So it's like having a superpowered security guard that never sleeps and is always like learning new moves.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So imagine a system that could look at every piece of software before it even goes on your computer and find any hidden malware before it can do any damage.
Wow, that's incredible. So AI isn't just about reacting. It's about like predicting and preventing these attacks.
You got it. And that's what proactive cybersecurity is all about. Not just cleaning up the mess after something bad happens, but using AI to find those weak spots and fix them before anyone can exploit them.
That does sound promising. But are there any downsides to using AI for this stuff? I mean, if it's that powerful, are there any risks?
That's a great question and one that we need to be asking. One thing to think about is bias in the algorithms.
Wait, how can an algorithm be biased? I thought they were like totally objective.
Well, they're only as good as the data they're trained on, right? If the data is bad or incomplete, the algorithm will be biased too. So imagine an algorithm that was trained on attacks that, you know, mostly came from a certain part of the world. It might not be as good at finding attacks from other places.
So like a detective who's only ever worked in one neighborhood.
Right.
They might miss something important in a case that's totally different.
That's it. And then there's the risk of hackers figuring out how to, like, trick these AI systems. You know, they can manipulate the data and make the AI think everything's okay when it's really not.
So they're basically tricking the AI while they're, you know, doing all sorts of bad stuff in the background.
Exactly. These are real problems we got to solve as we bring AI into, you know, our security systems.
So it's not like a magic solution, but it's a tool, right? With good things and bad things.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. We got to be smart about how we use it, you know, be aware of what it can and can't do, but also use all that power that it has to make our system safer.
Right, that makes sense. So, okay, before we get too deep into AI in the future, let's come back to our listener for a sec. You know, our source really focused on what Rhode Island is doing, and they even talked about this cybersecurity company, Techmugen.
Right. And while it's good that Rhode Island is trying to fix things, I think that section about Technesian has some really useful stuff for everyone, you know, not just people in Rhode Island. Like if you're a business owner or just someone who wants to be safer online, there's good advice there.
Okay, so let's cut through the marketing stuff and get to the point. What did Technesian say that our listeners can actually use?
Well, they talked about these things called security audits. It's basically like a health checkup for your computer system.
Oh, I like that. So it's like going to the doctor for your computer.
Exactly. And these audits can find problems that you didn't even know you had, you know, and then you can fix them before someone else finds them and uses them against you. They also talk a lot about encrypting your data.
Okay, data encryption. Remind me how that works again.
Okay, so basically it scrambles all your important information so no one can read it without the key to unscramble it. So even if someone breaks into your system, they can't actually see your data.
So, like putting your important stuff in a safe that only you have the combination to.
You got it. And the last thing they really stressed was training employees. So everyone knows how to spot those phishing scams, use strong passwords, and just be safe online in general.
That's so important because, you know, sometimes it's people who make mistakes, right? And then the whole system is vulnerable.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
You can have the best tech in the world, but if someone clicks on a bad link or uses a dumb password, it can all fall apart.
Yeah, that's true. This is all great stuff, and hopefully people are taking notes. But it makes me think about what we were talking about earlier, you know, with national cybersecurity. It seems like we're dealing with two different things, right? Like what individuals can do, and then like big national strategies. Do those two connect at all?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Cybersecurity, it's all about everyone working together. It starts with individuals doing what we've been talking about, but it also needs, you know, big action at the national level and even global.
So it's like we're all links in a chain, and every link has to be strong, right?
Exactly. We need better laws, better tech, countries working together, all of it. But at the end of the day, it's about people being smart and demanding that our leaders do the right thing.
That makes sense. It's not just one person or one government's job to fix this. It's about all of us working together to make the whole digital world safer.
Exactly. And that's where this idea of like collective resilience comes in. You know, the stronger our defenses are individually and all together, the less likely we are to be victims of these attacks and the tougher we are as a whole society.
I like that. Collective resilience. It's a powerful concept. So even though this whole Ryburgess thing is scary, it's also a chance for us to like wake up and really think about cybersecurity, you know, what we can do as individuals and what we need to do together.
Definitely. It shows us just how vulnerable we are, you know, in this digital world and how important it is to work together to protect ourselves and our data.
This has been a really eye-opening conversation. It's amazing how one event like this attack can bring up so many complex issues and get us talking about important stuff. We've covered so much in this deep dive, from the details of the attack to like the future of national security and even AI. But I think the big takeaway is that cybersecurity is everyone's responsibility. We can all do things to protect ourselves and make a safer world online.
Absolutely. The more you know, the better prepared you are.
Yeah.
So stay curious, stay alert, and keep learning.
Well said. And before we get too carried away, I think it's time to take a little break. Let's process all this info and come back for part three. We'll answer some questions from our listeners and wrap up this deep dive with some final thoughts.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Welcome back to the deep dive. I hope you had a good break there. We've covered a lot of ground so far, you know, from that Ryburgess attack to like the whole landscape of national security and even the future of AI and cybersecurity. So now let's switch gears a bit and answer some questions that we got from our listeners.
Always good to hear what people are thinking.
Absolutely. So this first one, it comes from Sarah in Seattle. She says, and this really resonated with me, she says, "With all these cyber threats out there these days, is it even safe to like use online services anymore? Should I just go off the grid and like head for the hills?"
Oh, Sarah, that's a question a lot of us are asking, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to get freaked out by all this stuff, but going totally offline isn't really an option for most people these days, right?
Especially if you like the convenience of being online and being connected and all that.
Right, exactly. It's all about finding that balance. You know, enjoying the benefits of tech, but also understanding the risks and how to protect yourself. Being a smart digital citizen, that's the key.
So Sarah, don't pack your bags just yet. You can stay safe online without having to go full hermit, you know? Okay, next question. This one's from John in Jacksonville. He says, I hear all this talk about two-factor authentication, but I still don't really get what it is or how it works. Can you, explain it simply?
Sure, John. So two-factor authentication, or 2FA like people call it, it's basically adding another layer of security to your accounts.
Hmm.
Think of it like having two locks on your front door. So even if someone gets your key, like your password, they still can't get in without that second lock.
So, even if someone steals your password, your account's still safe.
Yep, that's the idea. That second factor, it usually comes as like a special code, you know? It gets sent to your phone or email, or maybe it's generated by an app. So every time you log in, you're proving it's really you twice.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, one last question before we wrap things up. This one comes from Maria in Miami, and she says, after listening to your deep dive, I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed and kind of paranoid, honestly. What are the top three things I can do right now to be safer online?
Maria, I get it. It's easy to feel that way, you know. Cybersecurity can be a lot, but remember, even small things can make a big difference.
So, top three things our listeners should do right now, what would you say?
Okay, number one, turn on that two-factor authentication everywhere you can. Your email, your bank account, social media, anything that has your personal info.
Yeah, we just talked about how important 2FA is, so definitely do that first. What's next?
Strong, unique passwords for every single account. I know it's a pain to remember them all, but honestly, use a password manager. It'll make your life so much easier.
Right, like that digital vault we were talking about. Okay, and the last one.
Be really careful about those phishing scams. You know, those emails or messages that try to trick you into giving away your info. Think twice before you click on anything, especially if it looks even a little bit suspicious.
Good advice. So 2FA, strong passwords, and just be a little bit skeptical.
You got it.
Awesome. Well, this has been an amazing deep dive. We started with this state-level cyber attack and ended up talking about the future of national security and even AI. But the biggest thing to remember is that cybersecurity is on all of us. We can all do things to protect ourselves and each other and make the digital world a safer place.
Totally agree. The more we know, the safer we are. So stay informed, stay cautious, and keep learning, you know?
Couldn't have said it better myself. So, to all our listeners out there, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Cybersecurity is an ongoing conversation, right? So, stay curious, stay vigilant, and we'll see you next time.